Hello, welcome to the return of the Bearcats Blogcast. We took off for the NBA playoffs and regular season, but now we're back. We couldn't come back until LeBron shaved his head. That was Matt's big declaration. And now apparently he's done it, so we can record podcast again.
Yeah, just like LeBron, you know, I'm no longer fighting the fact that I'm going bald.
It's a pretty tough road to hoe once you turn 30. Nobody ever tells you that you should really...
No, but they show you pictures of 5 years ago, and you're like, oh, I used to have hair there. I forgot.
It's like, oh, well, did my hair always look that thin? Oh. Oh, that's not great. How much do hats cost nowadays?
Too much. And you can't wear a fedora unless you're a hipster.
Yeah, and even then, you don't really want to toe that line too much.
No, no one should wear a fedora. That's the bottom line. No one.
With that great start, that's why we're the top Bearcats podcast, probably. I don't know. I don't know if there are other podcasts. I'm sure there probably are somewhere.
I'm not sure that iTunes ranks them. Or that there's enough to rank.
There's
probably more than just us.
Yeah, but if we don't know they exist, they don't exist.
I didn't expect to get philosophical this early.
Yeah, that's why the people probably missed the podcast.
We'll find out.
Quite a few things have happened since we last talked. Like the NCAA tournament happened. UC lost to UCLA. Luke Fickell has been doing things on the recruiting trail.
Been tearing it up.
Basketball has been scheduling the non-conference games that we implored them to. Oh, and Wichita State joined the conference.
So there's a lot of things that have happened. We're not really going to go back. We're just going to go forward. There are obviously some things that we're going to talk about tonight. We've already been distracted, and it's only been 3 minutes, so we're right on pace there. But we really should start with the recruiting. Because when we talked about the hire of Fickell way back in December, which seems forever ago, there was a lot of skepticism about the hire because it was so contingent on going all in locally and getting, you know, in terms of changing how the recruiting dynamics go. And he was very aggressive right out the gates in his first class, getting guys from the area to commit. And, you know, it started with Jarrell White, the LaSalle star, who will be a freshman this year. And it's really picked up with the 2018 class. They already have 2 4-stars in the bag. I'm not sure the last time that UC had 2 4-stars at any point in the recruiting cycle. And the most impressive part of it is that they are winning with the kids that we said it was imperative for him to win with. It's not so much, you know, the 5-star top 50 national guys. It's, you know, the guys who are ranked anywhere from 150 to 300. That's where they have to win. And that's where they have been winning. And it's just been an incredible thing to watch because this is what so many people have dreamed about for so long. And UC had a lot of success over the years with Brian Kelly, D'Antonio, Butch Jones, and the very beginning of the Tupperville era. But it was never with local kids to this extent. And that's what's really exciting because, yeah, this could really change the perception of not just the program, but the university in the greater Cincinnati area. And it's, you know, the university needs that change pretty desperately because there's still a very skewed perception of you know, the school in the area to those that live out in the suburbs.
Yeah, definitely. Because, like you said, like, recruiting did fall off the past couple of years. And one of the things everybody ragged on Tuberville for was definitely not recruiting Ohio, especially the Cincinnati region. And you could say their biggest recruit is Malik Fan, who everybody thought he was going to go to Michigan State. And now he's a commit to UC. So, like, who knows, like, how long it... Like, he could end up switching, obviously. But, like, the fact that Fickell's locking down, like, some of these top-flight Ohio recruits is pretty great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's only going to continue from here because they are considered the strong favorite at this point for Aeneas Hawkins, Archel Hawkins' son. He's a huge defensive tackle out of Moeller. He's a kid that Ohio State really wanted early in the process. He has a committable Ohio State offer, and he's more likely than not going to become a Bearcat. You got Chris Oates out in Winton Woods, another big, rangy athlete who's going to probably play outside linebacker at the next level. He's not considered a Bearcat lean at this point, but they are definitely in the race with him, and they have a really good chance to land him. And it just goes on from there. Like, this is shaping up to become a really good class. And so many of these kids are local, and that's the most impressive thing about it.
Yeah, because I think if you're going to build a program like Cincinnati, you have to keep that local pipeline going. It's like it's good to have, like, feeder states, like, everybody recruits, like, Florida and, like, Georgia and, but, like, Texas. But to have, like, Ohio giving you solid players and the occasional, like, big flashy recruit, it's, like, pretty great. It's, like, how you sustain a program from year to year. Like, even back, like, during the Kelly days, a lot of the big-time players were all from Ohio, like J.K. Schaefer and Caleros and so on.
Yeah, and Tony Pike. And even Ben Gadulli was nominally a Kentucky kid, but it's local. We're talking about Highlands here. That's right across the river.
Yeah.
But those are the guys that you remember. You know, the only... I mean, if you really go down those... If you think in your head of the big players from that era who were not Ohio people, there's a handful of them. You got Armand Benz, you got Connor Barwin, Marty Gilliard, and that's the list.
Yeah, everybody else, like, pretty much came from Ohio. And that's a pretty good way to build your depth as well. So you save them on recruiting a bit, not having to stretch yourself out so thin.
Yeah, it's a truism in recruiting really anything, whether you're talking about, you know, a new manager for a store, if you're, you know, working for some Fortune 500 company in retail sector, or whatever it is. A car ride is always cheaper than a plane ticket. Always.
And I think there's something to be said for getting, like, some of the, like, three-star recruits who maybe would have, like, tried to, like, walk on or gray shirt or whatever they do at Ohio State. Like, getting some of those guys to come to Cincinnati is, like, a big talent influx that UC really hasn't been getting the last few years, definitely.
Yeah, the walk-on program was really a strength of the team in the D'Antonio and Kelly eras. It is kind of floundered over the last couple of years. There have not been very many walk-ons who have been high-level contributors for this team. We've had them that have come through and get scholarships and become part of the rotation, but they haven't been, you know, standouts. You know, Jason Kelsey was never offered a scholarship. He was a walk-on. He became a Pro Bowl center. You know, that kind of typified the Kelly era, is guys like that. And UC hasn't had anybody like that in a while.
Yeah, definitely, because you have to go back a little ways to find, like, a walk-on who played at least some kind of role. Even, like, the walk-on who, like, earned a scholarship. Seems like that's been at least underreported with the Bearcats, and that used to be, like, kind of, like, big news, like, about a decade ago now with D'Antonio and Kelly.
Yeah, the only one I can think of is Adam Dempsey from 3-4 years ago. And I think Grant Coleman at one point was a walk-on, but I think by the time he started playing, he was already on scholarship.
Yeah, I think didn't he redshirt?
Yeah, I think he was a preferred walk-on to use the parlance, which means you're guaranteed a roster spot, but you're not guaranteed a scholarship.
I think any way you can just like raise the floor of your talent, especially in a league like the AAC, where teams like have gigantic swings in their like upper to lower talent pools. Like, that's how you win games. So all it takes is one injury to really like fuck up your season. So we've seen that like last year, for example. And with something,
yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
But I would argue that the biggest problem for last year had nothing to do with injuries. I mean, injuries happen in football. It's a sport that is littered with them. I mean, there's really no other word for it. The biggest issue last year was, like, there was nobody driving the car. Like, it was just a car on the interstate. It was going the appropriate speed, but no one was steering or changing the throttle inputs, or maybe, I don't know, using the brakes. And it went really well. It was fun to watch. I think we will all remember this season.
Hey, who can forget such great things like that that went against Purdue?
Yeah, take that, Big Ten.
In that great conference win they had against UConn, probably.
Did they beat UConn?
I hope so.
Yes, they beat UConn. That was going to be East Carolina, right?
Yeah.
That's how memorable that season was. It happened less than a year ago.
We have forgot to
have. And we have totally purged it from our memories.
That's why we are everybody's favorite Bearcats podcast.
Well, yeah, yes, but purging last season from our memories, that's a service. That's a public service to everyone. You're welcome. Yeah. We can't guarantee that it works the same for you, but it worked fantastic for us.
Like, once you like guess, like, oh, who was the coach last year? That's the way to be.
I don't know. He was an angry yet dignified Southern gentleman.
We can talk about the projections a little bit. Cincinnati not projected to do that great in all the big national polls. I believe Avalon, like their preview, had you see like in the 90s. And since Cincinnati did put out their schedule, they're projected on the S&P Plus to the 75th, which doesn't seem terrible. They haven't picked for 6.7 wins. Did you go over or under 6.5 wins for the Bearcats?
I'm going to go over. Because the biggest problem last year, it wasn't so much that the scheme sucked, though the schemes did suck. It wasn't so much that the coaches didn't know what they were doing, though they really didn't seem to know and or care what they were doing. It was that collective malaise from the coaching staff infected the players. And it was obvious in seeing they were never prepared for a game. They didn't show up half the time.
Especially against anybody who was above average that they played last year. Like, Houston, like, pantsed them, and so did USF. So did UCF.
Yeah, I mean, the Houston game is really indicative because that was a game where they came out with so much energy, and for the first half, it had the feelings of one of those old games at Nipper back in the Big East where, you know, they were just hanging around with the puncher's chance, and then Hayden Moore imploded upon himself. and the air went out of the building, and it became a procession. Like, it was, what, 40-16? That score line's not indicative of how close that game was, but what was more important about that game was UC had a plan, sort of. They were really very good about maintaining Greg Ward and trying to keep him in the pocket, and that was the plan to start. And it worked for a little bit, but Houston, being Houston, made adjustments, and they had nothing after that. And it seemed like from that point onward, like, the players didn't seem to have any faith in the coaching staff to put them in a position where they're going to have even a remote chance to succeed.
After that game, they went 2-8, or 2-7, since they did lose to Houston. And they did lose to UConn, that game that we both blocked out of our memories. They lost 20-9 to UConn. Unbelievable. East Carolina was the only conference game they won last year. They lost games by a lot of points. I kind of forgot.
They lost a game to a program that fired the most handsome man in college football and rehired Randy Edsall. They lost to that.
I gotta be honest, I kind of forgot how terrible UC's season went down the stretch.
I haven't even looked at the schedule from last year. And I'm proud of that fact. Because I like myself. So I'm not going to do that.
I think that's a good springboard for Fickell. Just because, like, he has to go, like, 4-8 to match, like, last year's low. Even if he does, like, people are just going to blame it on Tuberville and look to the future. It's like he's pretty much got, like, a free roll this season.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, he can have an absolute year zero where they just completely tear it all down and rebuild from the start. And he's not going to lose this fan base even a little bit.
The cold water, I think, comes just from the 3-game road trip to start the season after they get the layup against Austin Peay.
It gets pretty, pretty rough.
I guess we can run through the schedule in case people aren't looking at it. So Austin Peay at Michigan, at Oxford, at Navy, Marshall, UCF, SMU, at USF, at Tulane, Temple, at East Carolina, and UConn. So they do finish pretty easy. I guess whatever Temple is going to be, who knows. But like that 3-game trip is really tough. Especially with how tough Miami's been playing them lately. Like, that's kind of a toss-up game, at least as we sit here on June 15th.
Yeah, and that's really going to be an interesting test for the early parts of the Fickell era. Because I got news. Going to Michigan is not going to go well. I fully plan on being there because I live 20 minutes from the stadium now. But I'm going to have a really sad drive back to my apartment. And I know that now. And I've already bought the ticket. So how do you bounce back from that with a back-to-back of at Miami, you know, a team that this is their Super Bowl and has been for a while? You know, they are going in the right direction for the first time since the Ben Roethlisberger era, and they're really going to be feeling themselves. So they're going to have 5,000 people in the stands. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it'll be like half UC fans.
Oh yeah, like the other 7 will be UC fans. That's how that always goes. But like that's going to be a really tough game. And then you go to the kneecappers in chief at Navy. Yeah, that gets real rough real quick.
Okay, Navy probably a 3:30 CBS Sports Classic.
I
already know it's at 3:30. I think the interesting thing is the Miami game is at 8 o'clock. Like, when's the last time they played Miami? Like, at night. Like, since Roethlisberger was there?
2010.
Oh, wow, that was another banner year.
I was at that game. Isaiah Pede was phenomenal. And nothing else went right.
Miami does play go to Marshall to open the season. Then they play Austin Peay. So they just kind of copied UC's schedule. Just kind of weird.
My guess is somebody needs to do a search into the ADs or the coach at Austin Peay and see if they have Southern Ohio ties. Because that just seems like a suspicious way to spend a lot of time with family, is what that seems like to me.
I think that's kind of fair to say.
The family lives in Hamilton.
Yeah, I would bet that's probably right. They don't.
It's like, traveling. Oh, I can expense this trip. That's awesome.
They don't feel like traveling very far to get their ass kickings. Kind of wanted to know what their other non-conference games are.
I don't know. Two more bye games?
Oh, definitely. By the sea, they play... Oh, Christ, I, like, ruined it. I don't know what button I just clicked to go off their schedule. I don't know who's in their conference, so that doesn't really help.
I think they're in the Valley?
Yeah, the other game is against Morehead State. That's it. They only play three non-conference games.
Yeah, Morehead is an hour. So yeah, they really are just trying to visit family. Okay. Moving on.
Yeah, that ends the Austin Peay schedule breakdown.
Hey, we promised digressions. We can check that box. That's checked.
Yeah.
But it's really the schedule really breaks up into three different parts. You have the tough, easy slate there. Then you have an on-off quality to the next four games. Marshall, that's an off week. Central Florida, nothing's off about playing that defense. SMU, kind of off because they're going to score, but you're going to score too, so that's nice. And then South Florida, no bueno.
Especially if they're rolling into that game as good as everybody thinks they should be.
Yeah, they'll be pretty good. Hey, but then you get Tulane, Temple, East Carolina, Connecticut. That's your bowl right there. Like, those four. There's your three wins. Because this team is not going to be good enough to guarantee four wins against those four teams. But you can get three out of those four. And then you just need to find three more.
Oh, really?
I'm really talking myself into this bowl thing, is what I'm saying.
They'll beat Austin Peay, like, no contest. So you're looking for two You're looking for two more wins. And it's kind of hard to, like, just, like, say, oh, they'll definitely win this game. When we have, like, no idea how good SMU is actually going to be. I know people are optimistic about SMU, but they probably still suck. And it really comes down to how they do that three-game, like, road trip. If they can come out of that one, like, 1-2 or, like, 2-1, they're definitely should, well, not definitely, they should definitely be in bowl contention.
Yeah, look, if they come out of September with four wins or three wins even, they're almost certainly going to a bowl, barring a catastrophic injury collapse down the stretch. Because it's just too hard not to see a couple wins. And, I mean, even if you look at the win probabilities, they are obviously favored over Austin Peay. But everything else, other than the Marshall, or other than the South Florida game, is between 40 and 60. Either good or bad. But that's kind of, those are toss-up games. And, you know, in those kind of games, it's, hey, I hate to do the coach speak where you talk about energy and effort, because it's a crutch. But those are the kind of games that UC lost all year last year, because nobody gave a shit, you know? Nobody cared. They care this year. Like, even if you follow the players on social media, the new energy, the new vibe, it's not hard to see. Yeah, this is a group that is completely bought into what Fickle and his staff are selling. And just having that level of buy-in in year one is huge. I mean, if you think back to that 2010 team, that was the first year of the Bush-Jones era. That was a team that was incredibly talented. A lot of holdovers from the 2009 season. But there was no buy-in from that group of leaders. You know, they were not buying what Butch Jones was selling. As it turns out, nobody buys what Butch sells because Butch just likes to sell and talk. You know, he is a life champion. We know this. So, you know, like that's just having that level of buy-in in the first year is huge. And it's, you know, it's early. It's still June. We don't know how real this is. But it's hard not to be encouraged by what you're seeing and hearing and what is being talked about with this group of players. You know, there's a lot of talent still on this roster. You know, if you read some of the anonymous, you know, coaching bits from, like, the Athlon preview where they basically have assistant coaches from rival programs talk about this team. You know, they all talk about the same thing. Like, nobody bought, you know, it was obvious that nobody was steering the ship last year. You know, that's not going to be the case this year. And I think, you know, I stopped short of saying that I expect a bowl, but I think that's a reasonable expectation.
Plus, like, you do have, like, some big stars coming back. Like, your receivers had really good years last year. Like, Devin Gray should be one of the best players in the league. We've seen it from Mike Boone before. Although, like, there is, like, a pretty big question mark behind him after he battled injuries and splitting carries a lot last season. Like, he averaged under 4 yards a carry last year, which is, you do have to wonder, especially with how much of the offensive line that just got turned over. And I think it's fair to question, like, the coordinators, since, like, Freeman's never been a defensive coordinator. And, like, Denbrock, like, who exactly knows what he's going to bring to the table? Because, like, what Luke Fickle has been, like, what been saying, like, he hasn't actually, like, been in that type of offense before. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and those coordinator hires they're definitely a factor, which is why my expectations for this team are a little bit, tempered.
Like, the big knock on Freeman has been, he's a great recruiter, but who knows what he's like as a coordinator. And obviously we can see what he's doing on the recruiting trail, along with Fickle.
Yeah, and look, but we've also seen guys who came to UC with that exact reputation more or less succeed. I mean, you say that, I immediately think of Eddie Grand. And Grand was a polarizing figure at UC, but his offenses were damn good. Year after year, they were consistent and productive. Did he make questionable calls in high leverage moments? You damn straight. But, like, the body of work was still very, very good for someone who had never really been in that position before. That's obviously no guarantee about what Freeman's going to do. But, you know, I've seen some chatter about how going that route never works. Well, it's not never. You just don't know. It's kind of a wait-and-see thing.
Yeah, because he's, like, 32 years old. So, I mean, it's like you can, like, look at his past history and be like, oh, this is what he did wrong, this is what he's done right. It's, like, pretty much a mystery defensive coordinator. It's just really going to make things pretty interesting, at least the early going. They have the Michigan is just, like, such a daunting test so early in the season, because I doubt we'll find out anything but when they play Austin Peay.
We won't find out anything from either of those games. It's like, oh, they're better than Austin Peay, and they're worse than Michigan. I could have told you that before. I told you that in August. We just have two data points that prove what I said. Right? But, I mean, it's small sample size theory. You don't know much. And that's always the case with the new coaching staff. And that's, you know, for good and bad.
Let's talk about quarterback real quick. Do you have any lean on where do you think Fickell's going to go with a quarterback? That's going to be the hot button issue all summer.
I have no idea what he's going to do. I have what I want him to do, but I'm not a paid member of the staff. You know, though I did submit my application, it was not picked up, unfortunately. Apparently, I don't have the right references. Whatever. It's a new coach. Generally, these guys want a fresh start. That's why I think it's going to be Russ Farrell. There is a lot of film on Hayden. Some of it spectacular. Some of it atrocious. I really, you know, I was extremely critical of Moore last year. I don't think he's a good quarterback. I didn't then. I don't now. I really don't think he should be the guy. And because it's a new staff, I think they're going to want to have their own guy. And Trail is the most talented guy on the roster, and he's the closest thing they have to their guy. So I think that's the direction they're going to go.
I kind of think that it could be Trail as well. Obviously, we didn't see a ton of him last season. What we did see wasn't consistently great. But who knows how much of that was him just being thrown into the fire. And who knows how much of that was him just, like, being a freshman and not being super great. Like, you can't really, like, one touchdown, six picks. I think he threw more pick sixes last year than touchdowns. Which, you know, isn't the best.
Yeah, but there was... It's not just that he was a normal freshman. Like, normal freshmen start and they make good and bad plays because they do it within the confines of the system and, you know, there is a structure to the thing. There was no structure to the offense last year. Like, there was no overarching theme. There was no one thing they were trying to accomplish. It was just, oh, yeah, we're just going to go run around and... throw it a bit, try to run the ball. Oh, we can't do that, so we're not going to do that at all. We're just going to throw it all the time.
Did he even make it through, like, one complete game last year? I don't think he did.
Did anybody?
Fair question. Gunnar Keogh had his one game against East Carolina. That was about it. The magical Gunnar game.
I mean, there was nothing to what they were trying to do. Like, it was just utter chaos. The players didn't trust the coaches didn't trust the players, nobody had any idea what they were trying to do. Like, it was the most inept offense I've seen. Because usually when you have an inept offense, it's for very clearly defined reasons, such as we don't have anybody who's good, right? Like, I have vivid memories of Miami, like, circa 2011, where it's like, holy shit. Like, it doesn't matter what they do. They're going to suck because they just don't have the players. That was not the case for last year. Khalil Lewis is really good. Devin Gray is really good. Mike Boone has shown signs of being really good. On and on with these skill position players. And individually, some of those guys had really good years. But as a collective, it's impossible to say. Yeah, because you can't, like, there was just no way for anybody to succeed with that plan.
Because you can't point to, like, any area and say, like, oh, this was the best part of the team last year. There's so many holes, like, throughout the whole team.
Defensive tackle. Axel, continue.
Like, we know for a fact that half the team didn't want Hayden Moore or Ross Chair to be quarterback. They wanted Gunnar Keogh to start. Like, Tuberville said that himself after they lost to UConn. Like, that's why Gunnar Keogh started those few games near the end of the year. So, I mean, if there was a team like that was pretty ripped apart, and I'm pretty sure we'll find out more stories as time goes on. Like, whatever happened with Gunnar Keogh last year, like, somebody needs to make a 30 for 30 short about it. About his career, his weird career.
Oh, yeah. And it's not even his entire career, the last 12 months. Like, go start last summer and then continue. Actually, it's 18 months. You start December 2016, right before the bowl game. That's when you start. And then he doesn't travel. And then you just continue with that story right on through the draft process. There you go, producers. Take my idea. I just want a couple pennies.
Yeah, we still never found out why he didn't go to the bowl game.
And I don't expect us to. I don't expect that ever to become public knowledge. There's a lot of rumors out there, but I don't.
Apparently, on this list from 24/7, only two players from the two five-star recruits from the 2012 class went undrafted. One was Gunnar Keogh, and one was Russell Shell. And Shell signed with the Steelers. So that makes Gunnar Keogh the only five-star from that draft class that didn't do anything, at least this past draft. It's kind of interesting. I guess they've been all old guys.
Yeah, he had a weird career. No other way to put it.
We'll have to get Gunnar Keogh on the podcast sometime. When he's not taking bubble baths. We'll break down those walls.
Wow, man, that's a tough get. I'm gonna outsource that to you. You make that happen.
I'll do my best. Let's switch up gears a little bit, since now we just went to the ridiculous with the football talk, and talk a little basketball, since the not conference schedule, even the conference schedule that came out, I believe, a week ago, shaping up to be a big year for Cincinnati basketball. One of the things we harped on for fucking ever last year was UC playing big non-conference games. Including some, like, tournaments and games, like TV games. And of course, they are. They play in the Caymans Classic, which is a kind of a garbage tournament. They announced the bracket today, and UC plays Buffalo in the first round. Tricky Buffalo, doesn't our Hurley coach Buffalo?
Yeah, I think it's the more famous one.
And they would play.
Oh, no, he's at Arizona State.
Yeah, so Buffalo probably is garbage. Maybe play UAB or Richmond, throwback to Conference USA, and then probably San Diego State or Iowa in the final. So, I guess a kind of neat event there.
I think I speak for the entire college basketball public when I say, please, Iowa, win that. Because we don't need a third edition of UC San Diego State.
Yeah.
No one needs another 45-40 win for someone in their life.
Especially when it's the third of three games.
Can you just imagine how horrible that viewing experience would be?
Oh, God. Yeah, when everybody's tired and don't want to play. Like, oh, is this tournament over yet? So we don't even know when this tournament's going to be on TV, which is kind of weird. So I guess it's going to be a weird channel.
NBC Sports.
Oh, Jesus. Well, it is sponsored by the Mountain West, so it would be CBS Sports Network. So good luck finding that on Thanksgiving week. I'm sure everybody will be...
Root TV!
That would be a great one to go to. Who wouldn't want to go to the Cayman Islands?
Yeah, do a little money laundering. Come home with some anonymous sacks of cash. Sounds like a great time.
Playing in a brand new gymnasium. So
that seats 400 people, I'm guessing.
It's just moments away from the world-famous Seven Mile Beach.
I mean, how many people does the Battle for Atlanta seat? Because they play literally in a fucking ballroom.
I think that has to be under 1,000.
It's got to be. And this is like the low-rent version of that.
This is a nice vacation. Apparently, it's a high school gym. So, we know that much now.
Well, we do play at Tulane.
Oh, bam. Tulane burn.
Yeah, take that, you rolling fucking waves.
The best part of Tulane games is, like, those crazy UCAT kids travel and those sound like home games.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough to get a bunch of college kids in a bus to go to New Orleans. Historically, that's been a really tough sell.
In the league, granted, you see a road game at Tulane. Just like they want those kids to get drunk.
Yeah, I mean, the Tulane fans seem to really like it. You know, they go for a nice, you know, to read the program. And then all these kids start yelling.
Let's go root on the boys. I'm sure it's all old people who get the basketball season tickets with their football tickets.
Yeah, it's Tulane, so recent college grads who stay in New Orleans.
They
can't afford the tickets. Their student loans are too bad.
It's probably they get their baseball tickets. They have to get basketball tickets to get the baseball tickets for Tulane, the sport they're actually good at.
Yeah, a great move by the athletic department. That always goes well. And thus ends the Tulane portion of today's podcast.
Just throwing all the big names like Austin Peay, Tulane.
Yeah, the Govs. Who doesn't love the Govs? That's right. You get two mentions.
Couple other big non-conference games for basketball. They play Florida in the second annual Never Forget Games in Newark, New Jersey. I don't really know what the first Never Forget Games were. I'm sure they were classics. Yeah, UC also plays Mississippi State in a home-and-home that starts this year. I guess the NKU is a home game. They go to Xavier. And they play UCLA at the Pauley Pavilion just 2 weeks after they play Xavier. So it's a pretty loaded December. The span of 3 weeks, they play Xavier, Florida, and UCLA. So we'll learn a lot about the team early. And the Mississippi State game is wedged in there, right between Florida and UCLA.
Yeah, and this is the best schedule of the Mick era by far. A couple years ago, they had Butler and Iowa State in the same schedule. We thought that one was the best ever because it was at that point. But this is more of what it has to be. It has to be like this every single year going forward. It just has to. Because if your aspiration is to make deep runs of the tournament, eventually win the damn thing, you cannot go from the beginning of the season through March playing one or two games where you have a chance to have high leverage moments at the end of a game where your kids get experience playing under that kind of pressure. I mean, it's just not feasible to do that and then expect them to come through in March where the pressure gets the highest and the magnitude of the mistakes gets magnified without experience, you know, without putting them in that environment multiple times before that. And let's just call it what it is. The conference is not equipped to provide that kind of preparation for the teams that they send to the tournament. And every year they're going to send three or four. Now that we have Wichita State in the fold, I think it is going to be three or four every single year. Occasionally five, but it's going to be at least three. But yeah, it does them a disservice to have them playing in this league with somebody below average teams. And the way they set up the conference schedule this year is great because they play the worst four teams in the conference, I think, once each, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Please, no more home and homes with South Florida or East Carolina or Tulane, because those three are always going to be down there.
Yeah, and avoiding like that really like loads up your conference schedule. Like, we don't really like Memphis is probably going to suck. But, like, having like a rival at least on the schedule twice is a big help. And like Temple's always solid. SMU and UC have been at the top of the league since it began, pretty much. Connecticut always has talent. Who knows what UConn's going to be? Who knows what Houston's going to be? There's a couple of the wild card teams in there. But you'd rather play them twice than play East Carolina ever, really.
Yeah, because you don't get anything out of those games. Like, they can only hurt you. It can only hurt you to play East Carolina if you decide, we're not going to show up to this game. Which, like, by the way, UC totally did this year. Yeah. They decided to play half a game. It didn't really go well.
And for all we know, that was one of the big reasons why they got like shafted down with a 6 seed. Oh, they didn't lose that game, but they lost to the UCF. That's who they lost to.
They lost to the fall of Taco.
But like go ahead.
No, continue. I mean, I think we're both going to say the same thing.
Like, I think last year really proved that like it doesn't matter what you do in your in league play. You have to show some flash in the non-conference. Like, we shouldn't really harp on the fact that like they lost their chance to play Duke. But like that was like their big like crowning jewel of the non-conference last year, and they missed it completely.
Yeah, that's the thing. They had one chance for that game, and they fucked it up. You don't have one chance to get a good, like a really high marquee matchup next year. You got multiple chances. But, you know, Florida's probably going to be pretty good. Xavier's always good. UCLA will, I mean, we'll see how they take not having Lonzo, but I think they'll still be pretty good. Maybe?
Probably.
But at least that's a game everyone will see.
Yeah,
because it's UCLA. But, you know, that'll be a marquee game for everybody.
Definitely, because, like one thing we can definitely say for sure is, like, this league has been punished every single year by the selection committee. Like, you have to go out and play huge non-conference games. You have to try to get gigantic wins. Because you're going to be a 5 seed if you go 30-5. Like last year, they were 29-5 and got a 6, and they lost one team that didn't make the tournament. Like UCF was the only team that didn't make the tournament that they lost to. Except, I mean, like you're just gonna get screwed no matter what. So you have to go out there and take your big chances. And as much as Mick hates like TV games, you have to play in those. That's the only way you're going to play somebody like Florida, because Florida doesn't do home-and-homes with, like, anybody. It's good they got him against UCLA and Mississippi State. But, like, you
no,
can't
No, outside, like, Florida ahead. Doesn't... This is just like football, where Florida doesn't do shit in the non-conference outside of... Like, they don't leave the O Center unless they have to. Right? Like, they don't get good, high-quality non-conference teams to come to them. Like, there is a reason why every single home Florida game in December and November is on ESPN3. Doesn't matter how good the team is. Like, they're just not going to play anybody there because they're not going to do a home and home. But but they'll do three or four of those these one-off games in, you know, in Orlando or Charlotte or wherever the fuck it's going to be at every single year. And whatever. And that's kind of how UC has to do it now.
Yeah, definitely. Especially somebody like Florida who, like, will like play neutral site games, or they'll play whatever that one Big 12 challenge thing is that the SEC has. Like, that was really like their, like, that was the only like non-conference road game they played last year. Besides at North Florida, that was those two. That was it. That was the list.
Yeah. So, I mean, but there's a lot of, like, the thing is, that attitude is not unique to Florida. It's it's an embodiment of how all the top, let's say, 50 programs in the country try to schedule their non-conference. They're thinking, we're not leaving here unless we got a good reason to. And that good reason could be, it's a good high-quality game that's going to help your reputation, or it's good high-quality game that's going to get you paid, too.
Or it's a rival. Those are the only, like, three reasons.
That's it. Yeah, so, like, given these constraints, Mick can't die on the hill of principle by saying, I want a home-and-home with everybody. Well, you know what the max level of home-and-home you're going to get is? It's Iowa State. That's a good game. That's a really good game. But it's not the greatest. Right? But if your principle, your pride, or however you want to phrase it, raises to that level but no more, that kind of depresses everything about your program in terms of what you can accomplish. Because a team that plays this kind of schedule every single year, they're going to recruit better. They're going to have better exposure because of their better exposure, they're going to recruit better. And because they recruit better, they're going to have higher quality players. And because of their higher quality players, getting exposure to high leverage moments earlier and earlier in the season, you're going to make longer runs into the tournament. Like, these factors all kind of roll back into each other. But you have to start it somehow, and, you know, this is the year it's starting. And this is a great team to start it with. Like, let's not pull punches on this. Like, this is going to be the best team of the Mick era, bar none. Like, the floor for this team is Sweet 16. Anything less than that is a failure.
Because you're probably definitely going to lose, I say definitely a lot, you're probably going to lose two of your best players. It's Jacob Evans. If he has the year everybody thinks he's going to have, he's going to test the waters. Gary Clark graduates. Kyle Washington, if he has another monster year, does he do something crazy? Maybe. But, like, you're looking at, like, a kind of a transition year. Like, where you have to kind of cash in on some of these big teams that they've had the last few years with really, like, nothing to really show for it.
Yeah, and it's the timing for this epoch of talent is great, because let's say you get, this is the last year for Gary. I think Kyle's a senior, but you do have Jacob Evans and Cumberland. So, like, that's a great top four. And, you know, you have at least two of those guys coming back next year, hopefully. It might only be one, but let's not go down the darkest timeline. But you have half of that group. You have Jacob Evans and Cumberland to open the new arena, right? And that's going to create a whole new momentum for the program, just like building the fifth or, you know, building, like, just like building the Schumacher Center kind of served as a launching pad for the beginning of the Bob Huggins era, which was the highest level of success of the Bob Huggins era, if we're talking purely tournament terms.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to bring up the broken leg that we shall not talk about.
Like, his first 5 years were just, like, lights out incredible, especially where Cincinnati was in the Tony Yates Dark Ages.
Yeah, it's just the Mick has done a great job of building a culture that you see, where everybody kind of buys into the collective. And that got them through a lot of years in the Big East where they were at a marked disadvantage against every single team they played in terms of talent. Just pure talent that you can put on the floor. UC almost never won that battle. But they had a lot of success because they had this toughness in defense and rebounding culture. And they still have that. But they have that now with better offensive players. And if they can use this coming season and their marquee schedule to make, you know, to launch a run into the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, the Final Four maybe, then you're talking about a true program-changing season. Because after that, everything gets better. You have a great arena that you can recruit to. You have a long history of success in the tournament. You have a long history of making the tournament every single year. Like, those are things that you can sell to kids very easily.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think like the big crowning achievement would be hitting into Sweet 16 again. Just be like the cherry on top of like moving in like a big direction for the program. It's like, it seemed like it kind of plateaued for a couple of years there, but now it's like kind of kicked into another gear as we move forward in the McCronin years. And it seems like this is a really kind of exciting time for the program.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I know that the Big 12 decision did not go the way that everybody wanted to last summer, but this is still, given everything that transpired, this is about as hopeful as I've been about the Bearcats in both sports in a long time.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair to say. It's like football is turning a corner. Like, basketball is hitting some highs they haven't hit in, like, since Huggins was the coach. But, like, they both, like, are lacking, like, the one big thing. And that's just, like, the marquee moment to, like, push them over the top. But just, like, kind of, like, obviously frustrating for basketball. Because people have been saying that since they lost to Ohio State in the Sweet 16 5 years ago. But I kind of think we're going to see something different from the Bearcats this year. Kind of think they're going to start, I don't know, I was about to say they'll play faster. But I think they're going to kind of like open things up a little bit more, just because that's where basketball is becoming. Like, we saw like kind of last year, like UC played faster for a Mick Cronin team, at least, even though they played really slow.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was fast for Mick. So it was the fastest tortoise on the planet. But that wasn't even the part that I liked about the team. It was the focus. Outside of the, you know, let's be real, I love Troy. I'm just going to say that now. But outside of the 10 to 15 possessions a game where Troy would just dribble for 30 seconds, other than those, the offense was really fun to watch because the ball moved, players moved. And they were just aggressive and attacking in a way that hasn't really been typical of a Mick team. And most of those guys who brought that kind of energy, especially Cumberland, they're back. And they got a point guard who likes to run. They got 2 point guards who like to run. You know, just loosen the shackles a little bit, Nick. It'll be fine.
Yeah, and like their best players being like their wings and Kyle, and the guy in the middle, Kyle Washington. I'm counting Clark as a wing for some reason. But I think you have so much variety on the team. With how efficient all those guys were last year, like Washington was extremely efficient, so Gary Clark was, Cumberland was, like Jacob Evans was like unreal at times. And those guys play like a ton of your minutes too. As long as like they avoid like stupid things, like injuries, like it should be a really solid team up and down the roster. And just Wichita State having another like preseason like top 25-ish team just really helps. It's like you gotta think at some point UConn has to be better, right?
No comment.
And with SMU, like that program just doesn't seem like it's gonna regress totally into the dirt. So you have like three solid teams and two name teams that are going through turmoil. Like Kelvin Sampson can recruit, and France teams are always good. UCF has a real coach for once in their life. It's like the top of the league is like actually kind of better. And like you said, they avoid like all the shitty teams. So hopefully we don't have to go through any like mind-numbing slogs through the middle of January like every single year.
I don't know. We play Temple twice.
At least those are entertaining slogs most of the time.
Are they? I feel like everyone has ended 57-55.
They did 81-74 last year. 66 possession game with Temple.
That's yes, not, but did you feel like it was a 67 possession game?
Their first game, 65-60, 70 possessions. What a garbage game that was. I forgot how bad that game was. They almost lost that game. Yeah, maybe I changed my mind.
Yeah, I mean, look, Fran Duff is a wizard. He takes, you know, a bunch of random things and makes a team that's somehow functional out of it.
Is this going to be the rare podcast that actually ends with optimism and not negativity?
Yes, it's the summer.
I don't know, I feel like last summer we were pretty down on things, and then
things rightfully so, this was pre-football season. You know, I had brief optimism that ended very, very quickly.
Well, the parts you were optimistic about, did they turn out well with the defensive line you touted like all season? They were good.
Yeah.
If we say that was your only prediction, that was a hell of a prediction.
That was the only prediction. I did not make any other predictions. Please don't go back and look.
Yeah, those bad predictions, that's when Chris was on the podcast, saying all these wrong things.
Yeah, it was all him. We had nothing to do with that.
He's like, oh, their offensive line's going to be so awesome. But they won't throw 100 interceptions.
They'll run for more than 3 yards a carry.
They won't get blown out by UConn and everybody else. I don't know, we should turn it around before we close the podcast now.
We're back to being happy.
Happy days are here again now.
Oh, yeah.
In case people forgot, tell them where they can find you on the internet.
I'd be on Twitter, yo. At MOper. I think there's an underscore somewhere in there. I think it's before the Oprah and after the M, but I'm not 100% on that. And I'm not going to look. I'm sorry. I just can't be bothered.
The professionalism everybody else missed during our hiatus. But we aim to record more as the summer goes and into the season as well. We won't just stop before major events happen.
Again.